You're muted.
What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, you're right. Here we go.
Thanks.
Do you hear the limitations in this? You want more, or do you get the idea?
I get the idea. Okay. I was hoping someone would say that.
I will. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. We'll come back.
It's really interesting the way you worded, though, that you acknowledge that this guy is a genius, but you're like working with, you're trying to compose poetry or a play or something with only 50 word vocabulary.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it, because it's undeniably beautiful.
Or maybe it's, what's that? Yeah, it's not that it's beautiful, but it's not up to the standard of the Dome of Florence.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's also, it gets boring. They did amazing things horizontally, cannons, inverted cannons, all kinds of stuff like that, that substituted for the fact that you couldn't really change key or anything like that. So, the composers, Forbach, and here's the interesting thing, for those of you who have heard of the C minor series, it's really part of the whole struggle to establish the true system. Because what you're hearing there is not the true system. It was the true system of the universe is a system of 12 tones and 12 major keys and 12 minor keys. And that was created before the first person whistled on a flute. It was a matter of discovering it, and like the true nature of the solar system, it was suppressed. And that's for, as Matt pointed out, what reason is there that we could not have landed on the moon 300 years ago if these ideas had not been suppressed? They were known, these things were known. And why did Bach have to do what he did in the 1700s? It could have been done a lot later. But if it hadn't been for Kepler and Bach, it also might never have gotten done. So there's nothing inevitable about it. So I'm going to play for you a couple of things here. This is what we call a diatonic scale, a major scale. Diatonic seems like a big word, but in Greek it just means through the tone, meaning it starts on one tone, C, and ends at a higher C. And people think of it as an eight-note scale because there's eight notes in it, but there's really only seven different notes because the eighth one is a repeat, okay? Okay, you've all heard that, I think. And then there's another form of it, the minor scale. And this is the minor scale. And I use particularly the white note scales just to make a point, because those are the same notes as you have in the hexachord system, as I showed you. This is what's called the chromatic scale. This one right here. How many notes were in that? 12, yeah, I wrote it down. Yeah. The 13th note, like the other scale, the 13th note is a repeat. So there's actually 12 different notes. Those are all what are called half tones. The way that's represented on the piano is from one key to the next, whether it's to a black key or to another white key. It's just moving through each adjacent key. So the chromatic scale was one way for composers to investigate and make a point about the actual true nature of the system. They knew that that had to be the case. And before Bach, 100 years before Bach, really around the time of Kepler, you had people looking into this. Here, for instance, is a piece by an Italian composer called Frescobaldi. And see if you can hear that chromatic scale in there. I'll just play a bit of it. Can you all hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
It was like the first section, the first fugue that we played.
Yeah, and then it's in kind of a fugue with itself. But is it very interesting? Kind of limited. But it's a scientific experiment, and that's what's important about it. Because they're actually experimenting in how to create the actual nature of the real musical system as opposed to what has been imposed. And it's also a question of tuning, because the tuning with the using these rational numbers is also wrong. And you'll hear that in the next one. Is Pim in the room? Oh, there you are. Tell me how to pronounce this guy's name.
Zvili.
Okay. And how do you pronounce the Udekerke?
Which one?
The old church in...
Oh, the Oudke?
Oudke, okay. Yeah, he was the chief organist at the church, the old church in Amsterdam. It's interesting to me that Rembrandt was about 15 when he died, and everybody attended services there, so the young Rembrandt probably heard him play in that church. But he was known as the builder of organists. His students went to Germany, went all over northern Germany, and created the hotbed out of which Bach came. So there's a direct connection between Zwelinck and Bach. This is a chromatic fantasia by him, which is also exploring this. It's a good 100 years before Bach. But you can also hear that it's out of tune, because the question of establishing this system also involves the question of a tempered tuning. And actually, I have There are performances that are much better than that. But again, don't just think of it as...
Pardon?
You gonna get any videos?
Oh, sorry.
Okay. It's, again, don't think of it as just old music that seems kind of boring compared to what we do now, but see it as part of a scientific experiment with these guys trying to establish the actual system. Bach, in a very early piece, worked with exactly the same thing. This is his Chromatic Fantasy and Fugue. This is the fugue part.
Is he using the same tune?
Well, no, he I think, had established his own well-tempered tuning by this time. But if you listen to the fugue, you will hear that it's all based on using all 12 tones in half-tone steps. This is the end of the fantasy. Kind of taking it to an extreme. He really wants to make a point here. But I have to play you the beginning of this, because he never did this quite again, but I think he was really a bit angry about what was going on, because he really kind of goes a little bit overboard.
Yeah.